There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to the final edition of Media Geek. My name is Paul Riesendahl, I'm your host. This has been your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. And, well, this is it. With me in the studio is John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, the most frequent guest ever on the Media Geek radio program.
John Nichols to his Bob McChesney.
To help me send it off into the ether. And as well, on the phone, we have producer Eric Yarnell.
Hello. I just wanted to wish you well, Paul, on this endeavor, this new phase in your life that you're undertaking.
Well, thank you.
You make it sound
Eric.
Like he's dying.
I'm not dying.
No, you're not. I mean, you're alive and well. But
everybody, we just wanted to announce Paul Riesendahl's having a sex change operation. He's coming back next week.
It's
as
Pauline
Riesendahl. Yeah, I was right. Going to say Paula Riesendahl, but.
Right. Well, Eric, thank you so much for hanging out with me this year and producing and helping me helm some of the better shows in a while.
And some great interviews like
Jerry Del Cagliano, which we enjoyed quite a bit, as well as we talked to Eric Foge, who wrote the great book Ride the Dial about Clear Channel. Lots of fun we've had here.
Hey, Eric.
Yes.
I just have a question for you.
I know that
you learned a lot from being at WNUR and being a producer for Paul. But have you learned from Paul?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, honest.
I think I learned two things.
Okay.
I'll boil it down. I learned a lot, but I'll boil it down to two things for sake of brevity. The first thing I learned all about Herbie Hancock from the wonderful Media Minute.
That's not my fault.
And two, more importantly, I guess I wasn't aware of the independent media that existed out there until I started working on Media Geek, and I'm actually very glad. I think it's enriched my life as a former student, I guess, emerging person in the world.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about working with you, Eric, is that you are a radio enthusiast, and
yeah.
I think that in your generation, as someone as a recent college graduate. It's a dying breed, as Jerry Del Cagliano pointed out to us when we interviewed him earlier this year. You'd say that amongst your peers, radio listenership is not very high. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, and not only that, but it's almost like people that listen to radio a lot are mocked by the youth. And, it's a struggle.
So have you been mocked? Have you gotten wedgies because of your radio enthusiasm?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but, it's been close. I mean, at the company I worked at over the summer, my radio passion was often the source of jokes.
Even though it's a company which was, works in the area of music promotion.
Yeah. It was, So it was bad, but you just get through it. You just focus on the good times you have listed.
Well, there we go. Well,
makes sense.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for calling in for this last edition of Media Geek, and I know you'll continue doing your program here at WNUR Morning Sickness.
I will.
Which
and,
go ahead.
Sunday is 9 to 10 to get in a brief plug. But I also wanted to say that later tonight I will drink to you, Paul, and media geeks everywhere.
Because for people who are not here and listening to the live feed here in WNUR, people who are listening to the podcast, this is going. We're live here on New Year's Eve at 9 p.m. Central Time, a few hours before the clock turns over to 2010. And you'll be, folks on other stations will be listening to us the following week at the first week of 2010. And we thank you all for tuning in. I too, will raise a glass in your honor, Eric, and I look forward to seeing you when you get back here in town.
Thanks, man. And, you guys have a good show.
Happy New Year to you.
Yep, Happy New Year.
Bye. Well, you know,
that was pleasant.
Very pleasant. Eric is great to work with, and he really made you know, because this has been a volunteer activity for me these last 7 years. And many times I have my high and low moments. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm tired and I realize I don't have much together for the show, and I gotta dig in and do some research and catch back up. Sometimes that would just be calling you, John, and saying, "Hey,
I got nothing. Please come on.
You want to talk about HD Radio on Thursday?" And you know, and you go through a couple of weeks of that, and you hit the trough. But Eric's enthusiasm for the program and for radio, the medium of radio, which is you know, very rare, because even here in a college radio station, I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm here. But, you know, even when I was in college radio, I think there were some people who were in it for the music, some people who were in it for the cultural reasons, even the social reasons, and only a number of them were truly enthusiastic about the medium itself.
Yeah.
You know, and that, it's a rare disease to be such a radio geek.
You know, the other thing that I thought was interesting, since we're just we're throwing compliments out in the air, is, I mean, I've only met Eric a couple times, but we had a chance to sit down with him and talk with him after a show one night and things like that. Oftentimes when you're doing a talk show, which this kind of is in a certain way, the producer is a second-class citizen. He or she is a minion that all they do is they press the buttons, and you actually gave him agency in your show. There were times when he would actually interject observations or comments which were really spot on. Like, I would be listening going, "Hey, I wonder about," and then he would actually articulate something like that. Or he would come in with a funny little clip that he found somewhere, something like that, and just, in some ways, throw you off your game a little bit.
No,
and
I actually liked
that. Is really cool.
The extra
that is really cool that
energy.
There was that create that you know, that you didn't have when you were doing the showdown in Champaign, because you were producing it yourself by and large.
Well, I Drew Tirico, who we have to say
for
a big shout out for a little bit less than a year, I think.
Yeah.
Right around 2004, gave me a hand with the program, right. And I think, you know, I think and that was fantastic as well, because, you know, again, we sat pretty much side by side in the studio and did the program together. You know, and Drew did it simply because for the love of radio, for the love of the type of program it was, and having a chance to do that. Drew, living in Chicago now, I bump into him every so often. And, you know, he'd been involved with the Independent Media Center down in Urbana-Champaign at the same time I was, which is how we, you know, got a chance to talk. And he offered. I mean, he just said, you know, "I'd love to come in and try my hand at being the producer." And to me, sure, I'm the host and creator, but I think this is about independent media, and this is about opening up to voices.
Yep.
And if the only voice on the air is mine, then there's a disconnect there. And certainly the most prevalent voice is mine, except when, I mean, I try to lay back when I have a guest on, very much so. But if the only voice is mine, then I also wonder whether we're achieving, you know, that goal. I mean, it's a balance. Radio shows are personality-driven enterprises, and that personality can be forefront. It's in the choosing, it's in the curation of the program, but it's also about interaction.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a lecture that goes on for half an hour every week. So it's been a lot of fun. And I also have to give big props to Andrew Gotthelf, who helped me out with the program immediately when it started here in WNUR. He is a member of the sports department here at WNUR. But Andrew Gotthelf helped me out, helped me learn the studio, helped me learn how things roll around here. And I'm very grateful to him for giving me that leg up. And he brought himself a radio and media enthusiast coming at it from, as a journalism student and in sports journalism, also brought an interesting perspective to the show for the time that he volunteered. And I really appreciate that. So I really appreciate the opportunity to have been able to continue to show up here at WNUR, beginning September of 2008. You know, and of course to WEFT, the station where it all got started, where I would not have even gotten interested in the topic had I not been involved there at WEFT, a great, great community stations. One of the you know, right there in the second wave of community radio, you know, started the real effort for the station started in 1976. It took about 5 years for them. I mean, just to show you how difficult it is in Champaign-Urbana, which at the time did not have a full FM dial in central Illinois, the home of University of Illinois, 120 miles south of Chicago, did not have a full FM dial, took 5 years to get all the paperwork through with the FCC to get a new license. And part of that was getting their license application challenged by the Moody Bible Institute, which has a station on 90.1 FM in Chicago. 120 miles away, I want to add.
Yeah.
It required getting, you know, engineering surveys, required having a lawyer in Washington. You know, and so if you have a community radio station in your town, it is an absolute, absolute treasure. It is a valued commodity. Do everything in your power to keep it on the air, whatever you can to keep it on the air, because it is not easy to get, and it's even harder to keep going. But I do want to look a little bit back here, you know, in the last 7 years. And I've done a little bit over the course of the last 4 or 5 shows since I announced that the show is going off the air. In we've seen this, you know, in some ways a sea change, but only in some ways, in the media democracy movement.
Mm.
And even the connection of these two ideas. And it's not as if there hasn't been media democracy movements throughout American history, at
right.
least. Press freedom movements.
Labor press in the 30s.
Right.
The Blue Book controversy in the 40s. The
alternative press of the
UHF television allocations for educational broadcasters in the 50s. Alternative press in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, I mean, it's been a constant, there's always been a constant undercurrent of public discontent with the status quo of our media environment, and especially our broadcast environment, because that is the one facet of our media environment that is restricted by design. Not everyone can put on a radio station. Not everyone can put on a television station. And so stations are licensed to operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity, but that term has been historically construed to mean whatever the hell the broadcaster wants it to mean. And that often has not been in the democratic interests of the country, but in the pecuniary interests of the company that mm-hmm. owned the broadcast outlet. And so, yeah, there's been this constant undercurrent of people pushing for something that has now come to be called media democracy.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that in the shadow of the 1996 Telecommunication Act, which did many things, but the thing which traditional media feels still the most harshly is greatly relaxing media ownership mm-hmm. rules, especially radio, lifting the ownership cap altogether for the national
it
ownership.
It destroyed my career,
Paul. It
destroyed
Paul. Your career.
You know, I mean, radio news used to be a very vibrant facet to our media environment. I mean, without radio and radio journalists, there wouldn't be television journalists. You know, all of the people that descended from that era, descended from radio, descended from the written word as spoken. And now that medium that did so much to spur a new medium has had its soul ripped out from mm-hmm. it, you know.
Through this massive consolidation that went on during which.
And it was a numbers game. It was a cost benefit analysis. People came in and they bought up radio stations and they clustered them together into single broadcast locations. And then they looked at every department at the radio stations and they said, which ones make money and which ones don't? News never makes money. I mean, if you didn't know that already, news never makes money because you can never sell enough advertisements to pay for the staff time that it takes to produce a newscast. And now radio broadcasters knew that going into it. But back in the day when the public interest, convenience, and necessity meant something, it was okay to lose money. It was okay to lose money on this service because you were providing a public service, which ultimately would stand you in good stead. Now, it's all about money.
Mm-hmm.
And radio news is simply not a profitable business, and especially at the local level. My first job in radio commercially was in 1993 in Valparaiso, Indiana. It was a two-person radio station, mom and pop, AM-FM radio station. There were 3.5 radio journalists in that newsroom. Mm. I was the half until I got promoted to full-time after I graduated. By the time I left in 1997, there was one, just the news director. We no longer did news during the middays. We no longer did news during the afternoons. Forget severe weather warnings.
And that was probably because he was getting squeezed.
Oh, yeah.
by the incursion of Clear Channel and their ilk, who were driving down the ad revenue by packaging their clusters. So instead of buying ads on stations individually, you bought them as a package.
Right.
You as an advertiser saved money, but then the stations that couldn't offer packages of three and four stations were seeing their ad dollars, and it was basically this steady race to the bottom.
And people started to realize, I remember back in 2000 when I was working still in the media, going out for a smoke break and stepping into a jewelry store next door to this office building where I worked. And I don't know why I went in the jewelry store. I was just messing around, and there was this woman in there, and she was probably in her 50s, and she's, you know, just making banter with me because, you know, maybe I was a client. I was going to buy something, and she says, "What are you doing?" I said, I'm in radio news. And she's like, "Oh," and I'm like, we just got to talking about media and stuff, and suddenly she turns to me and she says, "Well, you know, it really doesn't matter anymore because five companies own everything." And here was this 50-year-old lady who I never expected those words to come out of her mouth, but you're right. It hit a nerve. Some, you know, the decimation of radio made people sit up and realize, hey, my favorite morning show host is gone. Hey, where did the news guy go that I listen to every day? School lunch menus in small towns, you know, the obituary, swap shop type programs. Many of these things that were the bread and butter of local radio were just wiped away, erased out of the ledger book of what was considered radio programming. And more people began to understand that. And I really think that it didn't manifest itself in a policy fight. It manifested itself by people saying, we're going to try to replace what's missing. And that's why micro radio became so large. I mean, micro radio, unlicensed broadcasting, has a long history going back to before radio was even licensed. But it really jacked up in the 90s after the passage of the Telecom Act of 1996. So many people were on the fence, or so many people knew that something was amiss, that once the implications of the 1996 Telecom Act started to come into play and they could hear what they were missing, enough people became radicalized to say, screw this, we're doing it ourselves. You know, as you close this chapter of speaking your mind. And you know, people should realize that radio.mediageek.net's not going anywhere. Paul's a big believer in keeping digital data available, so all the archives of all the shows are going to be available online. You're still going to be blogging both at MediaGeek
and
at Radio
them up
Survivor.
Archive.org,
right.
And get them up on a Radio for All, just yeah. So that there's a duplication.
Right. So as you come to the end of this chapter of doing this weekly show, and you're leaving it at a time when there's so many unresolved issues, and I mean, I you can blow me off very metaphysically by saying, well, there's always unresolved issues, but I mean, like, how do you think you've helped create the kind of change that we would all like to see? How have you facilitated the growing of blades of grass?
Well, is that
something you want to take credit for even? Or are you just too shy to even to take credit for
Well,
that?
You know, I mean, it's...
But I mean, you've done something here. You've done something for 7.5 years. Well, if you go even further than that, back to Radio Free Conscience Days, you know, 10 years.
Doing the program is always just
a line on the resume, no, man.
Doing the program has always been an outgrowth of things I hope to do in actuality, right? So in addition to doing the program, I think having done the website, my own work in community radio, in the small scale and individual stations like WEFT, the early days of WRFU in Urbana, working with the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. And I think continuing in as an advisor here at WNUR. With the program, I hope that it is made stations, listeners, not take it all for granted.
Yeah.
That the stations who've picked up the program, that there's been someone there at the station who recognizes the value and importance of what they have.
Planting seeds.
And that there are listeners at the same time who tune in, whether they tune in on purpose or whether they leave it tuned in or they're just seeking on by, that momentarily recognize that this just doesn't spring up out of nowhere. You know, there's real people behind it, real thought behind it, a history that these ideas flowed, that it did not all of a sudden just drop out of the sky in 2000 to have a low-power FM station.
Right.
It didn't just drop out of the sky in 1949 to create community radio. That in each step, you know, there has been some handing off. And there has been fight. Sometimes there has been blood. There has certainly been money and sweat. And to be able to chart this out, and I think to be able to go back and find moments and to continue to provide these moments for anyone who might stumble upon them on the internet to hear some of these stories, because in a way, because what the internet allowed the program to do that it could not do otherwise was to go from being thrown off into the ether to being now a documentation of history. Although it's a different sort of documentation by having it out there and in keeping it online. There is some documentation now of these things that have happened, of moments, especially in radio, that where there's been a little bit of that spark of recognition, whether it was in 2002 in Seattle or whether it was when we went to Radio Access Democracy in Minneapolis, where they did this great art project of hundreds of people building little transmitters,
mm-hmm.
where they brought together, you know, the forefather of pirate radio in the U.S., Tetsuo Kogawa, and brought him in to talk about his use of radio to bring people together. And now we can document this, and it's out there. And on the internet, keep it alive. I mean, I like to think of that as a contribution. And yeah, I think it is. It's mostly about sprinkling the seeds. You know, did someone hear the show and call a congressman? Maybe. I hope so. That would be great if they did. If they didn't, did they give $10 to their community radio station? You know, one of the you know, 13 affiliates, did they hear it and as part of the overall message get reminded and think to give a dollar or two or get involved themselves? I don't know. You can only just keep sprinkling them out there, right? If you get too focused on any one of those seeds and hoping that it alone will make it in, will sow into the ground and turn into a new dandelion, you're likely to be disappointed. But you get enough dandelions and you get enough of those seeds, you'll probably have more dandelions.
Until the lawnmower comes and crushes them all down and turns them into mulch.
Well, we've gone over our time here, but it's because the part-time suckers are MIA suckers
they're
this
off
week
time.
Again. Luckily, someone called in and let us know, so we'll be cooling off the transmitter.
So we turned it on to do this, and we turned it off.
Thank you to everyone who's tuned in. I really should do the official outro here. So I don't know if you have any final words before I get that all. It's been real. It's been fun.
It's yeah.
And I'm not going to know what to do with myself next Thursday.
Enjoy yourself, Paul. Enjoy yourself. And, you know, like I said, this is kind of it's a chapter. And I think the analogy fits really well with the book. This is the end of a chapter. This is not the end of your book. And it's certainly not the end of you being involved in trying to create a better world for the people around you and the people that you live with. And I can't thank you enough for allowing me to have been Nichols to your McChesney for all this time.
Thank you.
I really
do
appreciate it.
It's been very inspiring to have you on. I want to do a bunch of thank yous here. Once again, thank you to Eric Yarnell, producer this year, Andrew Gotthelf, who was producer last year, Drew Tirico, producer in 2004. We also want to thank WEFT for giving me the time in the very first place and the great programming committee. I need to thank Mick Wolf, general manager of WEFT, for being a constant encouragement and source of inspiration for me to keep doing this damn thing all these years. And I need to thank all of the stations that have carried Media Geek over the years here. And I can never remember them all, so I'm going to have to pull up my own website so I can read
a list.
No, I just have a really, really, really crappy memory. But I do need to go down the list and thank them all. Because I never intended the show to be syndicated. And it was only because Lee Robartis over at KRFP, Moscow, Idaho, had been listening online and knew low power station there at the home of the University of Idaho and said, hey, have you thought about syndicating it? I think we'd like to carry it here at Radio Free Moscow. And I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to. He goes, well, you're going to have to make it consistent on the half hour.
Right.
We're going to be able to find it every week. But if you're willing to do that, we want to carry it. And I said, all right, I'll make it happen. So thank you to Lee, and thank you to the listeners of KRFP Moscow, Idaho. My Canadian affiliates, I must say thank you to CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, CJUM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and my first Canadian affiliate, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Get the Maritimes well represented there. KQRP in Salida, California.
Brad Johnson and his crew.
Brad Johnson and his
crew. Helping us out in the Mosquito Fleet on 93.5.
Started out online with Party Town Radio and has kept community media alive there. Fighting also for the sake of public access television in Salida. Doing great work there, Brad and his crew. KQRP, Salida, California. KRBS, Oroville, California. Radio Bird Street, as they are known. KWMD, Kisilov, Anchorage, Alaska.
Jeremy Landsman's crew. One of the major catalysts of community radio in this country.
Definitely the second wave there. Yes, very smart man. Doing much to keep just broadcast media alive in Alaska, but also make sure there is a bit of the grassroots and the community embedded in there. Thanks to WBCR Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Thanks to WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois.
Tom and Daryl's crew.
Tom and Daryl's crew. They did I guess they still do, the Tom and Daryl show distributed on shortwave and was on satellite.
It was on satellite, yeah.
I don't think it is any longer. Great guys who've been down for, great radio, shortwave, FM, however, very community-minded down there in Macomb, Illinois. And WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont started out, of course. We recounted the history 2 weeks ago.
Radio Free Brattleboro.
Radio Free Brattleboro. And
just in your affiliates, you have years of history.
And I've talked to a lot of them on air, luckily. I'm glad to have been able to do that. And, of course, WRFU, Radio Free Urbana in Urbana, Illinois. And, yes, I have to thank my wife, Ellen Knudsen, for putting up with the show, but also not really putting up. She has helped in so many ways by giving me feedback, by giving me, good feedback on the program, ideas for the program, giving me the pep talk when I need it to keep going on.
The creative nudging.
And a media
producer in her own right.
Yes. And someone who appreciated it as something, not just some little hobby that kept me away from other things, but, thought of it and encouraged me to think of it as a valued endeavor. I really could not have done it all these years without your help. So thank you very much, Ellen. She's here in the studio tonight as we do our last show. So after the thank yous, we go to the last time to this little song. That brings to a close the last edition of Media Geek. No matter how you've tuned in, podcast, on the radio, or maybe you just overheard it, thank you so much for tuning in. Go back and look at the archives, radio.mediageek.net. Going to try and make the Media Geek blog, get it rejuvenated here. Have more time now for blogging. Go to mediageek.net. And we're fighting for radio. It's tough love for radio. Myself, my co-bloggers, Jennifer Waits and Matthew Lassar, at radiosurvivor.com. We just counted down our 14 top radio trends of the 2000s, I'm sorry. You do want to check it out, especially to keep up with radio, radiosurvivor.com. I'm going to continue to use the Twitter, 140 characters at a time, twitter.com/mediageek. I'll still take your emails, paul@mediageek.net. John's website, johnanderson@diymedia.net. He'll let you know just how many ways HD radio is falling apart.
And if you really want to listen to me on the air, you can still tune into WEFT.org Tuesday night, Wednesday mornings for Poodles Ahoy with
that's right.
My alter ego, Poodles
McGee. That one goes into the ether.
That's right. There is no recording of that.
You can definitely tune in. So once again, thank you for tuning in.